All right, so the way I always like talking is first give you a very glimpse of what our background is and a little bit of our philosophy so that you can understand the information and the take we have on both the investment marketplace, the closed-end fund structure, and how we utilize it for our client portfolios. So our firm was founded in 1989. Our family, my father was hired by Frank Cabiello in 96. We moved it to Virginia in 97, and we bought him out later that year. And so we are an independent and fee-only firm. It's a very common practice in the investment world, but we are family-owned, and we are basically asset management is our primary goal, but then we also, with our newsletter and maybe some future hopes of my own, a research firm and a data firm. Now, the data is collected by a group in London called Fund Data. They were purchased by Morningstar about a year ago, and I thought about hiring someone to collect the data for me every weekend and put into a report, and we could offer it for a whole lot cheaper than we can by utilizing them. But I realized they've got 30 folks working on it every weekend, and they already built the wheel. And so we leveraged off of them. And real quick on that data service, there will be a webinar Thursday, the person that won the subscription, where I go through and explain why we did it, how we did it, how I use it. And we do that every month, so you can always wait till next month to register for it. There's a link on our website for that. That being said, anyone else has interest, you can just log in, listen to me talk up to 15 people at a time for about 45 minutes on a Thursday afternoon and get an idea of what that service is. But it's a weekly snapshot of the closed-end fund world. We are closed-end fund specialists, hence the name of our firm. And we're a $60 million firm, so that's small to some degree, especially. You know, we were a little bigger last year, but we're still getting back there. And we're about 135 client accounts, and we have clients in 16 states. And then our philosophy, I mean, really, if you ask what is our core philosophy, we're value-driven. We like to buy good things cheap. And that's a common mindset in the investment world where you're looking for something that's inherently worthwhile, but you don't want to pay too much for it. You may want to look at our heritage as Scotsman. That might be part of our value discipline. Or just maybe you've been fascinated with closed-end funds for many years. And the major component of a closed-end fund is the discount. I mean, it's an investment that can trade below what it's worth. That sounds both exciting and scary, and we'll be discussing that later and how we look at it and what's normal and hopefully help you overcome that perspective. We believe in active monitoring of our portfolios. It's very labor intensive, but it kind of, I guess, gives me a reason to go to work in the morning and see what happened yesterday and what's going to happen today. And it's just our approach is kind of, we don't always make changes, but we look for what's going on and decide if anything needs to be tweaked. Peer-to-peer comparison. So when we look at funds, and you can do this with any investment, but for funds, we'd say, okay, this fund has this attribute. But what's normal for its group that do a similar thing to it? And so when I designed our data service, one of my goals was about two-thirds information in it you can actually find other places. But you have to type 650 ticker symbols to get that data point versus it's computed and organized and compiled very quickly for us for our review. So what's normal? Is a 7% yield, distribution yield, normal for a muni bond fund? Well, I don't know. Let's go find out. Let's do a little work. And there are some places you can get that information. And at the end of this presentation, I put together every free resource I could find. That includes discussion groups and professional commentary and other places you can look for stuff. And then there's a few places you can go to actually pay for stuff. It does include our data service, includes Hertz Belts in Miami, and the really expensive one, the full-blown website for fund data. If you ever want to spend 20 grand a year in data, they're the people to deal with. All right. We like active management. ETFs, which is so funny, when I first got in business, you know, people always said mutual funds are going to destroy closed-end funds. And yes, there's more assets in mutual funds. There are about 650-ish closed-end funds. There's about 8,000 available mutual funds. You take out the different share classes. 3,000 of those are money funds and bond funds, so about 5,000 equity. There's only 200 equity closed-end funds. And a lot of folks will ask me, can you really get a diverse portfolio with only 200 equity funds to choose from? And we believe yes. But we like the active management because we figure it gives us a chance to learn their story, to say, okay, they're putting our clients' money to work. We like what they're doing. They're going to make mistakes sometimes, but we like what they're doing, and we feel that the closed-end fund structure, because if you pay attention and give it a look, you can find it trading below what it's worth. But more importantly, as a couple slides will show later, below what it's usually worth on it, to itself. There's a relative discount, the relative comparisons that are important. Just because it's at a 10% discount doesn't mean it's a good buy. What if it normally trades at a 20? It might be at a relative premium to itself. And that's a great topic we'll talk about in a few minutes. And both the Hirschfelds and the Scotts, as the two best-known closed-end fund specialists, and there are other folks out there, we don't buy in the IPO, and we don't buy premiums. Now, somebody has to buy in the IPO. Hopefully no one in this room. We'll learn why later. And I just, for the life of me, don't know why you pay more for something when there are other options available. I mean, we occasionally will buy a mutual fund if the closing fund manager's funds at a premium. You know, we occasionally will decide to use an ETF as a holding place until we find that investment opportunity versus staying in cash. So those are the pillars of our philosophy that may guide you. Let's close this thing down. Distracting everybody. Whoops. Apparently didn't like me. Going back. All right. So closed-end funds actually go back to the 1860s in Holland. They came to the 1890s to the United States. And so they're the oldest investment company structure, a pooled asset. And that surprises the heck out of most people because they've never heard of them. And the problem is their structure allowed them to leverage. And if anybody lived through the 20s, obviously not in this room, leverage was a good thing in a bull market, and as we learned last year, it's a really bad thing in a bear market. So only 5 closed-end funds exist today that were pre-1929 crash. But, there's Adams Express, there's GAM, CET, I have it on a different slide. PEO. GAM is the oldest, it's 1927 fund, but I'm blanking on the fifth. I have it on a different slide, but you have done some homework. And closed-end funds, because of their structure, have really been best known for income investing. If we go back 10 years, and you say, let's look at closed-end funds and what percentage are in different pools, 82%, I believe, were bond funds. 82%. It's only 18% were equity funds. And when I first got in the business in 2001, people thought that, you know, closed-end funds, they might work for bonds, but never equity. But then lots of things happen that create opportunities, covered calls, tax advantage, dividends. People got stuck. You know, once the tech bubble burst, people got back to looking at income, equity income-oriented investing, where the structure allows a lot of extra, I guess, opportunities. So the international was great because a closed-end fund, as we'll talk about tonight, you raise $100 million. The manager goes, and he's going to go buy whatever he feels like because that's what he's hired to do. And then you, as the owner of this investment, if you own a mutual fund, you send your money to the mutual fund, they give you brand new shares. When you want out, you send them the shares and get back your money. What if anybody owned tech stocks in 99, 2000? Did anyone redeem some technology mutual fund shares in 2001 or 2? Anyone in the room?
Never admit it.
Well, the manager had to raise money to send you back your check. And so whether you should be invested in that is another conversation, but the manager had to make a redemption decision, not a management decision. And when we talk about closed-end funds, we always talk about the discount, and we'll talk a lot about it tonight. We also talk about fixed capitalization. As in, the manager does his thing, and the shareholders deal with each other in the open market. You want to sell it for $10.15? We'll find a buyer in the open market. If you find him, great. If not, move your price down. Move your price up, whatever, you know, direction you want to go. Intraday trading or control. Everyone here, I'm guessing, place a limit order in their stock portfolio. Understand that there's more than market orders available. With spreads wider on many closed-end funds, why not be patient and let the market come to you? Now, as with all investing, there's opportunity risk and principal risk. And we all hate to lose principal, but we also hate to miss opportunity. And with whatever investing you're doing, with closed-end funds especially, it's deciding, okay, 1014, I want to pay for it. Is 1015 going to kill me? You've got to make that decision yourself. I'll be looking at our trade screens going, should I buy a few more shares at the offer, or should I wait and see what happens? And our general rule of thumb is we'd rather be a little more patient, wait until a few more days later, either miss it completely, or maybe get it, or who knows, maybe we'll get a better price. Stop loss orders, which we didn't talk a lot about until first quarter 2009. I don't know why. Because people just like to see the numbers go up. But that's really great, and I will talk a little bit more about it later, but really, we, for some clients we've used it, for some we haven't, but the structure is you decide either this set point is my exit point, can't lose anymore, or trailing stop, many platforms allow to say a 10, 15, 12, whatever number you like, that if it hits a high water mark and pulls back, it'll get you out. Again, you're balancing principal risk with opportunity risk, and that is your call as investors. But those orders are available to you with closed-end funds, now also ETFs, but not mutual funds. And so that's one of, I think, a great advantage of the structure. Now, closed-end funds, some of them trade a lot, and they're pretty easy to get in and out, tight spreads, maybe a penny or two. Some of them don't. And there's not a lot of coverage of them, if you haven't noticed. Now, the largest holders of closed-end funds are the Harvard and Yale endowments, which are very short-sighted investment vehicles, of course. So what happens is you've got, and I've met a few more even in the last year, probably, to my knowledge, and I keep my ears open, so hopefully I know everyone that's looking to be found, about 10 RIA firms that say they're predominantly closed-end fund-focused. Now, only about two or three show up on Google, so I guess we're the ones that are looking to be found, well, more likely. Registered investment advisory firm.
Oh, okay.
In the investment world, there's the broker-dealer side, where they're paid in commissions, and the RIA side, where you're paid in fees. My clients look at me and go, what's the difference? And, well, not really a whole lot, but fees, I think, are more straightforward and transparent. And so that's RIA firm means registered investment advisory firm. Thank you for, by the way, questions, if you have one, raise your hand like he did, or just blurt it out. That works. I'm not going to lose my train of thought because I got slides to follow. All right, so market inefficiency. So if the big players aren't doing it, most investors are, and they're income focused. Most investors, most of our clients, most of our subscribers are over 50. They're either planning for or in retirement. A lot of people are AI members. Don's an old friend, and he goes all over and talks about closed-end funds and everything else he does, and does good presentations for the association. So, when the institutions aren't in there, and if, you know, people can react more emotionally for some reason if it's their money on the line and their spouse has given them a hard time about last quarter statement. So sometimes people make the mistake to sell at a low and buy at a high. Those inefficiencies create spreads, they create discounts, they create times where you're going to get a great deal on what we believe is a good investment. And you, again, won't find that on an ETF or a mutual fund. Now, leverage. Leverage is, well, 12 months ago was a dirty word. And I'd say it's appropriate when you know what's going on and you know what type of leverage it is. I mean, leverage costs are low as long as they've worked down their auction rate preferred. Leverage costs, which was a big problem in 2008. But you have three types of leverage. Now two of them, one of them is any investment. If you choose to, you can margin your account like you can anything else, as long as it's over $5 a share, and the broker's firm will let you do it, and you can increase your return. Okay, that's not a big deal. We don't really do that. You know, one client may ask for it when he's really feeling gutsy, but we really don't like that. Then you've got the fact that the fund can borrow money to increase its investments. Typically, the income-oriented funds, especially the bond funds, especially in a low interest rate environment, they can actually, if you look, I think I did a screen for mutual funds that are yielding more than 7%. this is, I think, with September, or October 30th data, I think there was 30 or 40 out of the 3,000 bond fund and money market funds available. So not a lot to choose from. And the main reason is that leverage factor. The fund can borrow. Now, leverage is going to do exactly what, it's like a seesaw. It's going to magnify whatever's going to happen. So you made a good decision, you're going to reap the benefits. You made a bad decision, it's going to put you to the floor faster. Now, the third leverage, there's going to be a slide covering that in a moment, it's where you buy a closed-end fund below what it's worth, and then you try to, ideally, sell it at a smaller ratio. So that change and that movement give you extra oomph on your investment on a relative basis. Now, that's the really cool leverage involved in closed-end funds. Now, the other one can be helpful, but it's not the most exciting. And again, they're diversified and professionally managed. Now, of course, the key is to pick a good manager and to make sure you know what you own. But in our opinion, you can get better performance on a risk-adjusted basis. And again, if you want more closed-end funds, the link on that slide or on our website, there's kind of a one-page little blurb we wrote that goes into more depth. So we always talk about comparing closed-end funds to mutual funds and ETFs. So this slide really just covers it real quick. And we have, of course, that ETFs and closed-end funds are intraday. Mutual funds and closed-end funds are active managers. No redemption pressures on closed-end funds. And unless you're an institution and can deal with creation units, there's no real redemption pressures on an ETF. Leverage. I used to not have to put the star after the no for ETFs and mutual funds, because the reason mutual funds came about was after the crash of 29, the investment public said we wanted a pooled investment that can't be leveraged. Mutual funds came about. Well, in the last 10 years, they've gotten really creative with derivatives and ways of going long and short and triple the S&P and double the down NASDAQ. So there is effectively leverage, but it's not the traditional type of leverage where they do a preferred share class or they had the option to make preferred. They really go after that type of leverage to then increase the investment to then go from a 6% yielding fund to a 7.5%. That's the core desire in the leveraging of the fund. And expense ratios, generally ETFs are the lowest, though there are a couple handful of equity closed-end funds like Adams Express, which is internally managed, and PEO, which is their energy fund, and a few others that have lower expense ratios than half the ETFs because they're not paying fee-based money management fees to the advisor because they're on salary. But generally, closed-end funds have lower expenses than most mutual funds. Of course, a small... You know, the India funds have a higher expense ratio than a U.S. equity fund. So if there is some wiggle room, but there's no 12b1 fees. It's really just the cost of the fund. It is the pure management fee, and some of them can be even lower than some ETFs. That slide went twice for some reason. All right, so we talked about the size of mutual funds, number of funds. Here's, as of the end of the quarter, the size of the closed-end fund marketplace. We can see there was a bit of a blip on the radar screen when the equity funds dropped by 50% assets. Because discounts widened and the market blew up. But we are working our way back up, and there's some few, there's new IPO, I think, this week. And there's about 12 to 20 that look to IPO in 2009. For some reason, couldn't get started. And so the folks we talked to think that they'll come out in 2010. Now, I will say, we need IPO funds, but those have traditionally a 5% load, and you don't know how they're going to trade. And the best reason I've heard for a discount is because the investment can trade at a discount, you have to discount its value to afford the possibility of a discount. I mean, it's a little bit strange here, but yeah, because it could, it does. I mean, that really is true. But this gives you an idea of really where the assets are in the sector. And heck, we're talking about discounts. You never do with closed-end funds. We get called by some of the press, and they always, what's the best fund at the deepest discount that you can recommend to our readers? And I can say that we love the discount because nowhere else you can buy something less than it's worth, that I know of. In the tradable secondary market with liquidity and with oversight and whatnot. But just because it's at a discount, I mean, some funds, we can, you know, after this presentation, we're going to log on to one of the websites and look at some funds, maybe give you a couple possibilities. I listened to Don Cassidy's presentation, and he said, these aren't recommendations, but they're, I think, suspects he may have used in his presentation, things to get you looking deeper. But again, everything I'm saying tonight is really for educational purposes. I don't know your needs, your tolerances, and your objectives, but there'll be some ideas. You dig deeper, keep an eye on it. Hopefully you'll take home a few things that are going to help you solve your goals for your investment portfolio. But the infamous discount is such a wonderful aspect of the fund. So to do that, we have a net asset value, which means you add up the value of everything in the portfolio, divide by the number of shares, you get NAV. Same calculation as a mutual fund. And for simple math purposes, let's say it ends up being $10 a share. But because it could trade at a discount, it does. So its market price is $8 a share. And honestly, right now, there's a lot of funds trading 12 to 23% discounts. So that's really a normal... Now, a year ago, you could buy the average national muni 70 cents on the dollar. And you wonder why they're up like 60% in the last 12 months. You could buy them 70 cents on the dollar. So the market price, you buy it for $8 a share, but the portfolio is worth 10. 20% discount. Now let's say the market's improved, maybe the manager makes a couple of good decisions, and the NAV is now 12. Well, people noticed the improvement, they got a little excited. We always talk about the discount as a popularity metric. It's up to 11. So the discount is now only 8%, 8 1/3, excuse me. And the NAV has gone up 20%, but your market price has jumped up 37.5. Now that was a little bit wider of a normal calculation just to make the math easy and to give you an idea of what type of trends are possible. And of course, you do have to sell the fund to realize that gain. You know, things can change the next day, and who knows what earnings will be released, and the market goes a little bit south, the discount's widened a few more notches on the basis point. But again, just graphically, if you're above net asset value, it's a premium. You're below, it's a discount. This slide is hopefully just very rudimentary to your understanding, but important because it's the only investment that really has this data point available. Now remember I talked about 12 months ago what the markets were like, and this is the average discount on the average closed-end fund. So remember, they're about 60%, 65% bond funds, 650 of them, and they're all professionally managed fixed pools of capital. So what happened? Well, people panicked. And they sold it for any reason. I thought it was at a family wedding in Minnesota on October 10th. That was a Friday where it first really, really blew up. And people were just selling it to sell. As we can see, and I won't go over every little detail what happened. We all know the news from last year. Things were bad, and then they slowly looked like they improved. So discounts spurred forward, and then they widened when things got a little uncertain and spurred forward. Right now, the average fund is at about a 4.9 discount as of last Friday's close. Maybe a little wider after today, but today was only 1%. That gives you an idea of, all right, we've come a long way. We're at relatively narrow levels. So what that means as an investor, you've got to be a little more patient. You've got to do a little more homework to find those relative values. Because unlike buying, I'd say, you could probably buy 95% of the average national muni bond fund and make 50% in 12 months. Now, if you want tax-free income and you want to make maybe a little capital appreciation on what you're buying, you're going to have to dig a little deeper, work a little harder. And now I say, I tell people, you know, last year, it felt horrible, but it was so easy to do our job because as long as you were long-term focused, we said this three times last year, how could it get lower than this? Then there was November 21st. How can it get lower than this? Then there was March 9th. And so far, I think everyone in the room would agree, but that's going to be the low, right? Let's all cross our fingers and hope. But again, I mean, I think one thing we did with our clients this year is we talked more about a sell discipline, a threshold for risk, and really... even the folks in there, a lot of most our subscribers do it themselves and use chat on the phone and see what they're doing. And they're doing a lot more of, okay, let's be more protective of that principle because you know what, I can't take this again. And again, give up some opportunity risk to manage the principal risk. All right, whoops, there we go. So that's not like the whole spectrum of funds. Let's actually look at some groups. So this is as of December 4th, so only one day off of trading. And I both put the current discount and the 52-week average. And one thing of note is high-yield munis, I think there's about 9 funds in that category, most are trading above NAV. Don't buy them, but, you know, they're popular and they're because they're yielding, I think it's one. That's a different slide coming up, but you know they're yielding a fair amount tax-free, and people, the mistake with closed-end funds is you buy the dividend. If you're going to buy a closed-end fund, buy it after the dividend, especially this time of year, we'll talk about at the end of the presentation, because even this year, some funds are going to have special dividends and larger dividends than normal. And again, most investors are individuals. They tend to act emotionally. Maybe don't look at their portfolio too often, but if they see a day that their fund fell 4, 5, 6%, and the market didn't, they might panic and sell. They may have missed the ex-dividend date that they were, you know, looking at. That happens a lot. Yes, sir?
John, do most of the funds provide adequate notice on when the regular dividends or special dividends are
being
paid to you?
Usually 4 to 3 to 2 weeks out. Like a lot of the year-end distributions were announced in November, and a few are oddly enough even paid in January. They're taxable in 09, but that's not my job to figure out. So yes, there is notice. If you buy a fund, I'm sure if there's any place you know that can notify you via email, a press release, or a news item. Because we buy a closed-end fund, especially a dividend-paying closed-end fund, sign up for that alert. Then you'll know they increased their dividend, they cut their dividend, and we'll talk about those two opportunities later. So yes, good question. So the other area where there's a lot of premium right now is covered call funds, and I'm going to go into some more depth there later, but just, you know, there's been really popular because, again, covered call funds, they're not going to go up as much as an equity fund, but they're going to help you make an income during choppy markets. And I think the theme of at least the last 6 months has, even though it's been trading upward, it's been a choppy market, not a choppy market. That was more of a Rockies market. This is more of, I guess, an Appalachian mountain market.
Question.
Yes, sir.
How relevant is that 52-week average as a comparison point, considering last year and the situation you had?
And again, it's better to look at the graph of that chart, which I'll show you how to do for free, real easy, on the CEF Connect website. But the challenge when you're doing some basic screening analysis, you unfortunately have to start with data. And then I always say, don't let one data point drive. The only reason you do something, you kind of have to have some logic behind it. So you're right. You saw the screen. Discounts average 25%. Now they average just under 5%. There's been a 20% average move on the average closed-end fund. So can we find something trading below its 52-week average? Probably not. If you do, there might be some more problems there. But the key would be, in that case, okay, the peer group average discount is X. So you might say, pick 10 muni bond funds that you like. Look at their average. Then get an idea of what's normal. And that's really why I did our service, so I don't have to do the math. But It gives you that chance. So you're right. It's going to be hard. You're not going to find a 25% discounted national muni bond fund. And if you do, I really wouldn't buy it today. I mean, there's something wrong there. They must have C paper or who knows what they have. AIG, though. Yeah. All right. So the average discount is 4.9, which is narrower than normal. So this is kind of touching back on what I said earlier, but I wanted to make sure it was covered very, very clear. The fixed pool is awesome and a really important part of the structure. The leverage, it's an opportunity that many of the funds afford. But again, you can find funds in many objectives, even the income objectives, that aren't levered. And so if you don't feel like having that higher distribution, if you can live on 5-6%, there's some great funds that will be less volatile, and you won't have to worry about an extra cost on the balance sheet and an extra downside if things go wrong. But it's there if you want it, and the discount benefiting yield. All right, so this is the impact of leverage. Now, this is just looking at, Nubeen has a couple of bond funds. You may have seen them on your computer screen. But looking at four that are levered and four that are unlevered. You can obviously see the distribution yield of the levered funds is higher than the unlevered funds. But that's simple. They're borrowing money cheap and investing it in more bonds, taking that extra income and giving it to you as a shareholder. That's why the leverage can give you higher distribution yield. So the discount yield benefit I talked about a second ago, and this is looking at that you have the NAV yield and then the market price yield, and the difference in that little spread, little magenta or purple part, 0.5% of extra monthly, typically a bond fund paycheck you're getting as an investor, and that's going to allow you a little bit more income while you wait. Now the goal is to try to buy it at the best spread, and the best investment at the best spread, and that's always a challenge. You know, what's the cheapest thing that's also not going to blow up on me? But that's the same with whatever you're investing. You know, what's the best deal I can find? And so here, just looking at the investment, this is as of September 30th, gives you a chance to see what that discount does for the yield. So this is why retired people like closed-end funds. Tell me where else you can get a monthly or quarterly distribution with those figures. Now, these are average figures. There's lower and there's higher. And there's some really high. And you got to be careful, and we'll talk about it later, but return of principal is not investment income. There's some great funds out there that pay you your money back and charge you a fee to hold it. Sounds like a good idea for one side of that equation. So, again, the average equity fund right now is showing a distribution yield of 6.9%. Now, my father always says, make sure you know the difference between a dividend and a distribution. But the dividend means they got the money from the stock or the bond. It actually was paid to them. The distribution could be realized capital gain, could be return of principal. And I'll show you where you can look for that information on the same site. It's really the best one site to start your palette into closed-end fund research. That's powered by Morningstar. So this gives you a great idea. Why are covered call funds so popular? Because the average fund of 29 is paying over 10%. Holy shnikes. But there's some return of capital.
Do municipal bond funds, closed-end funds, do they have same features as buying the actual bonds where they're exempt from federal taxes?
Yes, they're tax-free, and that's why people love them. Was there a question? Yes. So they are federally tax-free, but there's some more nuances as a pooled investment versus an outright bond. So I would say check with your tax advisor. You never heard that from an investment guy, right? Check with your legal professional. Check with your tax advisor. So there's some great, these are the major categories. There are more categories, but these are, I thought, really give you an idea of what's available for investments, and an idea of what they can yield as a starting point. So learned a little bit about funds and the discount and the yield and what's available. And I really can't hammer this enough. This is really so important for your venture into closed-end funds. Study and track the historical relative discounts of the funds. So just look at the chart. Last bull market, it was like this. Last bear market, it was like that. What are we in now? What are we likely to see? And use that to help you decide, okay, is 12% a good discount? Is 8% a good discount? Let that help guide your, apparently it's in the autopilot. Let that guide your research. And I'll say this a lot today. I don't know why you're buying the IPO. We've got to figure out as an industry a better way to form these things that don't take 5% out up front and then let it trade 10% lower in 6 months. So that doesn't sound like a good deal for whoever bought it. And being patient is, I think, a really important component. We think that, just look at the volume, look at the spread, just really, you know, I watch them every day. You don't have to. It's my job, so I do it. You can't take weekends off. You can't go to the beach, and you can probably be okay. You know, these at the end of the day, these are pooled investments run by active managers. So outside of a November 21st or a March 9th or an October 10th, you're probably good. It's not out of our call now. So the risk factors, because, I mean, no investment's perfect. And we've definitely seen things work against us. We've made good decisions, and we've made some decisions we wish we'd waited a week to do. But discounts can widen. You bought something at a 10% discount or 15 and it went to 15 or went to 20, went to 25, and you panicked and you sold. Well, whatever you invest, whatever it's in, don't need it in 90 days or 6 months. Whatever you do, be really careful with it because there's investment risk in the market. Someone heard about that one day. Liquidity risk, we talked about it, but just the lower trading volume and the wider spreads, so just be careful. That's a really important thing to know. I was telling the leadership tonight that, you know, closing funds, we love them. We obviously use them a lot, that's the name of the firm. But if you don't know what you're doing, you can so easily shoot yourself in the foot, have one bad experience, and swear them off for life. And we get a lot of those wounded closing fund folks that sign up for a newsletter and give us a call, and we chat with them for a while. And again, it's just teach them a couple of basic rules, try to send them in the right direction to just what to do. Just know that it can go against you. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the return of capital or principal sometimes can't be avoided. Just know it's there and try to have as little of it as possible. That's the general rule of thumb. No investment's perfect in the real world, only in the academic textbooks. And that typically comes from either a managed distribution or a level distribution where they say, we're going to pay 6% a year forever. Where did you find 6% in 2008? I don't know. So, some of the reasons that to sell a fund or the reason to sign up for that email alert about the press release, we get those for our work, but you know, it's available publicly. CRF, I could talk for an hour about how I don't understand why it's a huge premium, even after the dividend cut. So they cut the dividend by 23%. That means that they're paying a dollar, now they're paying 77 cents. It's not 23% reduction in price. Initially, it dropped 15.39% from where the announcement was until, I think, the end of this chart, December 7th. And the S&P, because it's not a perfect approximate, just giving you, was the market falling at the time? Is that what drew it? No, it's the market was up less than 1%. So they cut the dividend. Everyone out there that was making their ridiculous monthly dividend from this fund, you know, saw it go down by almost a quarter and said, I'm out. That's where the volume went up. Okay. That's why I try to avoid, or really do avoid the return of principal funds and avoid the funds at premiums, because when things go against you, they go against you harder because you're already paying more than the thing's worth. And then you get some bad news. It's like leverage. It's just going to magnify the bad experience. So,
what is that CRF?
CRF is a Cornerstone Total Return Fund. This actually is a screenshot from the website. Actually, the distribution was being paid, cut. And you can see here they're paying a 20% distribution on their NAV. And I don't have the screenshot here of what they're investing, but you can't, I don't know what you can buy that way. Because this is the discount giving you yield. This isn't leverage giving you yield. This is, but if you look, it's 96.9% return of capital. Now that number is going to be lower in the next reporting because of the dividend cut. But yes, people buying the dividend. I think Don said this, but you don't buy the dividend. Dividend's like a nice bonus or gets you interested. You don't buy it and invest in because of it. Sorry?
Thanks.
So, and this is a screenshot that you can get for free, updated daily, which not all the data is, but it lists when it was reported, which is important. So let's talk about some good news. It's not all dividend cuts. It's dividend increases. Now, this is a national muni bond fund that I noticed on June 1st increases dividend by 35%. And I, just for comparison, did the S&P, again, it's a bond fund, but gives you an idea of the market trend over that time period. And oddly enough, it's probably correlated, but it's true. And again, they increased the dividend almost another 4% on September 1st. Now, it went up total return, and about, I think, 35-ish percent of that was dividend payments. But 20% return if you had bought it on the news of increase and sold it, because remember, you don't make the money until you sell it. I think this goes until December 7th. Last night. So it was good news, and again, not all good news leads to huge moves. Generally, if I see a dividend increase of over 10%, if the fund's not on my watch list, it gets put on it to see how it's trading, to look at for increased volume. Is the discount going to narrow? What's going to happen? Fund raises dividend 1, 2, 3%, and then beats a dividend cut. But it's not going to really be a noticeable difference to my monthly paycheck. And again, this is the screenshot where you see the dividend very level and pops up and then pops up a touch more 3 months later. And what I like here is, oh my gosh, 100% of it? Ordinary income. Wow, they earned their dividend. Can you believe it? And they, I circled a risk. The major risk factor here is they're still showing 39% leverage on the balance sheet. It's the only thing I don't like about the fund. It means if something goes wrong, it's going to get hit harder. But the rest of the data really supports it as typically a better managed fund where they have, we're going to talk about Union a little bit, but Union, and it's the type of data point that most advisors don't know about, unless they're specialists, and even some of them didn't until a bunch of years ago. Uni is the undistributed net investment income on the balance sheet of the fund. And because it's complicated, I copied the article from our newsletter, put it on a one-page handout, and gave it to you tonight. So we'll talk about it, but if it doesn't gel, read that over. It talks about the uni and then a relative uni, which can be able to compare it to other funds. And that gives you a chance to look at this data point, which you can find on this website, to kind of know, okay, they pulled $1 of income in, they paid out 90 cents of it, they got 10 cents per share. That's their uni. Now, the key is look at when it was reported. On this fund, it was looking for October 31st, so pretty recent. And they had 15.95 cents of uni on the balance sheet. That's a cushion for future payments. That's going to help them weather a quarter or so of problems in the bond market. So there's a little bit more. It's going to outperform its peers, all else equal, if we have problems because of that uni figure. But again, no one data points the reason to buy the fund.
Whose screen is
that? This is on cefconnect.com. We're going to pop on the site afterwards, and I'll point you to some of the key places.
They calculated uni per share.
They did with the new release.
Go on the original, on the quarterly statement.
You used to have to pull it yourself. And I noticed when they switched over to this new format that you could find it here. Now, they don't compute a relative uni, but that's something that we asked them to do for our program because in peer-to-peer comparison, 10 cents means more to a smaller fund than a bigger fund. Yes, sir.
With that similar
connection,
what,
cefconnect.com. It used to be called etfconnect.com. Nuveen pays for it. They used to use Thomson data. Now they use Morningstar data. And they realized they don't own any ETFs. And they decided to serve their client base. And they improved what they offer to closed-end fund investors. But they let ETF investors, I'm told iShares is developing more tools on their website. But again, I think that's your January topic. So he'll know more than I would. So kind of some snazzy things. The four C's of closed-end funds to consider. The characteristics of the portfolio. That means, what do they buy? Do they buy stocks in China? Do they buy high-yielding, i.e. junk, bond funds? I mean, what do they buy? Know what you're buying, and sometimes the name is it does have to pass through the SEC, but it's sometimes designed by the marketing department. Have you ever noticed that on fund names? Just to look at what they say they do, and know what they could be doing with your money, and that's a really important component. the calendar, the seasonal trends in closed-end funds, or like I mentioned, unless you're really sure about it, don't buy a fund right before it goes X. Because why get taxed on the dividend to hold it for like 5 days? There's not a lot of logic there unless you know something you're not supposed to. I don't know. Consistency. Manage distributions. The average shareholder loves them because they can count on that. And a lot of the guys I talk to, they can say, my closed-end fund portfolio pays me this much on the first and second month of the quarter, and this much on the third, and this special dividend is the average dividend I get in the year, and they know what they get paid on their portfolio, but they don't know what is paying that payment, I guess, the component. And again, uni, relative uni, which we talked about, but I could talk for that for a long time, but it basically, it's a cushion, it's a data point that helps you look for cushion on a bond fund. Now, some of our subscribers to the data service will say, well, the uni figures on the covered call fund is negative 100 and whatever percent. That's because there's 0.1% investment income on the fund level, and so who cares about the coverage of that? That's not driving your distribution. You know, it might be of note, but really I'd say the ballpark is if a fund, this is a rule of thumb, if a fund has a distribution yield, income distribution yield of over 5%, and the uni figure is more relevant than if it's under 5. And obviously, you know, 4, yeah. 3, probably not. Don't worry about it as much, but why would you buy an income fund yielding 3%? And again, we talk about capital gains. One way closed-end funds are different than mutual funds is you only pay the capital gains that you experienced. Have you ever received a bigger tax bill in the spring from your mutual funds that you realized you should have had? That's a structural advantage of the fund. But they're not as tax efficient as ETFs. But yeah, that's one piece of the closed-end fund world. And have I mentioned return of capital? No. Gosh, I never talked about buying on the IPO. So this is, you know, people say, why don't I buy on the IPO? We like to track, listen, we like to track funds compared to themselves, compared to historical trends. You know, we'd rather wait for a year or so and then know what it's like before we, you know, we missed out on the fancy-smancy IPO. This isn't venture capital. This isn't, we're not taking Google public here. This is a muni bond fund we're talking about, or a covered call fund. I mean, it's okay to be a little patient and wait, in our opinion. And so with that, why? These are really I've hammered them really hard tonight, but just the only point I could ever say is if all other closed-end funds in this investment focus are at greater premiums, if there are no suitable open-end funds or ETFs, this marketplace, there's a lot to choose from, and you have to have the exposure. And this is like going and having to have that brand new car and paying whatever price the dealer offers. I mean, it's not the best deal for you, probably in the end. I mean, if you have to have something, it doesn't sound logical, it sounds emotional. I wanted to cover the bond side a little more thoroughly, and we touched on it, but the dividend cut, and again, we'll show after this, we're going to pop on the web. Because it was too hard to get all those screened onto a slide, and we can look at whatever you want to at the same time. The average coupon for the bond portfolio, that tells you what they bought is producing. Then the uni figure, the dividend cushion. If you have the coupon, you know the cushion, dividend cuts are less likely. And again, the handout for uni. Return of capital. Now, the one caveat, and we'll talk about covered call funds a lot, like 4 slides on it, but from our sources, the call premiums on covered call funds can be, from an accounting standpoint, our return of principal. So I will handle a higher threshold of return of principal in a covered call fund because I suspect a portion of it, a reasonable portion, would be the call premium. But again, use reasonable. Look for the lower end of the spectrum than the higher. Look for the fund that's not paying. Sometimes I hear when a fund pulls the dividend back a little bit, there's that kind of an inconsistency of the dividend. But I like the fact that they're paying you what they earned. Now, if the market's used to it, they'll price that effect. I think PPR is a fund that we like, but it's had kind of an up and a down dividend. And it's a senior loan fund, and they're only paying you what they earn. So they announce it based on what's on their balance sheet. And there's something to say about it on, you know, a fund that's being that transparent. Says, okay, we invested your money, we did this, here you go. Versus saying 17 cents every quarter for life. It's not a fixed annuity. And then interest rate risk, this would be for any bond fund or any bond even outright that you may own. What happens when rates rise to the price of your bonds? And if you own the bond, you hold it to maturity, it doesn't default, then you're fine. But in a bond fund, this would be an ETF or a closed-end or a mutual, there is some risk because they have to reinvest and they may decide to sell it. So just be very mindful of the NAV value movement and be very sensitive to the widening discount for the future holds that rates are likely to go up. I don't think they can go down any further. And then I know that in Don's presentation, he talked a lot about default risk, and he covered it really, really well. And but basically, we'll buy high-yield bond funds, but we're probably more likely, we're not traders, but we also, when something goes against us, we'd rather lose a little bit, especially on a junk-type bond fund. You know, we'll hold it for now, but even... for the discounts, some of these high-yield bond funds are premiums. For some folks, I've even done a little bit as J&K is an ETF that buys junk. So, I mean, we're about 95% closed-end funds, as I said there tonight. You know, the occasional mutual fund tweaks in if it's pertinent, or the occasional ETF. I mean, but really, our bread and butter is analyzing the closed-end funds. And again, if the handout, want to read more, this is the shortcut to the page on our website for the data service. Relative discount. Now, this is, a topic not discussed at the conferences on closed-end funds enough. And so it's one that I really do enjoy talking about. And it's because people get so caught up in that discount, that it trades below what it's worth, that it's going to, you know, why would you buy something that trades below what it's worth? Sounds like a piece of beat-up used car. I mean, well, what's relatively normal for this fund? And this is just, I picked a random, I guess that the chart looked like it had good ebb and flows, and so I picked it. IGA is the 52-week chart. And we said earlier, what's the value of that one data point? It's as viable as one data point can be that encapsulates 52 weeks of something. It's a starting point. It's a way of screening out certain components, if that's the way you invest your portfolio. But as they say, a picture's worth 1,000 words. I never buy a closed-end fund without looking at this 12-month chart. And you can even go back a lot further if you click since inception, which most folks miss on the website. This thing trades at deep discounts and at significant premiums. And it's funny, I ran the same fund for a presentation 7 weeks ago, and it was at an 8% premium. As you can tell, when I did the presentation, it was at that premium. Since then, it's bottomed out and then recovered. So it gives you an idea of what's the neighborhood this fund lives in. What's the environment drives it to be worth more than it is. And I can tell you, it's the distribution yield and people not. I haven't looked at this fund in particular. We can look at it if you want. But how much return of capital is there? What's going on? So this has a relative discount of 50 basis points, which it was a relative premium when I ran it 7 weeks ago. But it gives you that idea of where it's now versus where it's been in the past. And again, look at that one number, but also look at the chart to say, okay, it can hit a 20% discount. That's possible. So know that could happen going forward. If things unfold and make it similar. So the reason I need to cover call funds, as I said earlier, they're unique to closed-end funds. They're equities, so they're not the normal bond topic a lot of folks hear about. There's also enough of them that there's options for comparing them, but not so many that it would take me hours to produce these slides for your benefit. So, and I just really, that really was why I initially did it 7 weeks ago, and I really just liked the way it worked out then, and so I've done it for this presentation. The average fund, and again, we do a lot of peer-to-peer comparison, is about a 50 basis point premium. But there's 29 funds, and I'd say they're very different, and we'll see three comparisons of six funds. the top 20% roughly, because there are 30 funds to be exact, roughly the top six funds have an average of an 18% premium. Yes, the average, yeah, that's almost 20% over par. Please buy those funds. Then the bottom 20% are the ones that are, I guess, the least popular in the neighborhood at a 12% discount. So there's an average of a 30% spread between the core top and the core bottom. That's a wide playing field of opportunity. Now, granted, different fund managers and different underlying objectives. One might be focused on smaller caps. One might be on the Dow. One might be on the S. So there's some nuances to the underlying portfolio. Remember what I said, read the characteristics or the investment objective of that fund so you know what they're doing. But again, all these funds predominantly derive their investment objective by writing call options on equities. That's the major factor of their investments. We then look at the average relative discount, about 6% premium, which means, as we said, can we find deals like we did 12 months ago? No. But the lowest six funds are only trading on average 33 basis points above their 12-month average. Doesn't mean buy them, but that means consider them, look at them, and some of them you may see have a relative discount in that neighborhood. Mutual funds, the reported performance on net asset value, you know, was quoted at the end of the day at $10 per share, and you sold it at 12, that's a 20% return. We talked about you buy a closed-end fund, you pay a market price, that's your cost basis if you add the commission in, which hopefully is very low. And then you sell it later at a different market price, add the commission in, and that's your cost basis adjustment as a taxable account. That's how you compute how much the government gets. Well, that's important, because it's your experience in the fund. You know, you bought something for 10, you sold it for 12. That's an important thing to look at. But the NAV performance of a closed-end fund, it's how the portfolio manager performs. And sometimes there's some big differences between market price performance and net asset value over periods of time. And so when I always compare funds, I like to look at how the manager did to its peers. Now, granted, you can't buy that, but it's good for analyzing the fund structure. So the average NAV year-to-date is up 21%, but the top six up 35, the bottom six up 7. So there's a handful of covered call funds that have done really bad this year. You know, I mean, something's not going right. That's worth noting and avoiding, in my opinion. And we talk about distribution yield, and I'll say that, not dividend yield, because it's what you're receiving and not always what was earned. 11.1%, we talked about it earlier. It's the highest, I think, in the groups of funds currently available. And the top six are yielding 15, and the bottom six are yielding 7. So twice the difference in distributions for the top six and the bottom six. And just so you know, the average expense ratio for the group is 1.17. because we'll be looking at funds and I'll be including the expense ratio. And that's important. You know, some people only buy the cheapest funds, but generally, if you can get under 1.5, great. Worst case, under 2, and be a darn good story if it's north of there. Average market cap, $500 million, just under that currently. Gives you an idea of how much liquidity can be out there for you. 1.621 million a day is the average liquidity for the average covered call fund. Some very lower, some very higher. And there's a metric we look at that takes the current market price and it plots it between its 52-week high and low. Again, another metric of, besides discount, of a relative value. And then 0 to 100%. Obviously, most funds are closer to 100 today than they were, you know, a year ago. And a year ago, they were closer to 0, making new lows, and now some of them are making new 52-week highs. And the average market price of the average closed-end fund, covered call, excuse me, 63% in the last 52 weeks. Yes, they were beat up, and they recovered. That's kind of a story. But there will be other things in the future, other opportunities. Other.
What's the average NAV return?
I brought my research for a reason. Average NAV for call funds. Average NAV return on a 52-week, 31.9. So yes, discount narrowing was a big factor. You'd be okay with 32, but you'd prefer... All right, so the best way... Yes, sir.
Just a quick question. Let's say an equity fund for a second, not a call fund. Like some of these things, I'm wondering if the run is over. You got to wait for it to bottom out before you buy back in, or is there a potential like stocks if the market were to go up 40% again next year? You know, is there an opportunity to continue on, or are they limited to that?
Well, there it's the current discount. Our narrow is at a 5% rounding for the average fund. So, but there are, I mean, there's a fund that we think is great. Now, one of our clients is the largest individual shareholder of it, so that's good to know. Adams Express. And it trades about 16% discount. And it's been around since 29, so it survived that market. Its expense ratio is 50 basis points, 49. And it really, because their salary is not fees. And so, and you can look at their portfolio and their type of things. I think those, you know, a lot of large, you know, blue chip type companies. And I, for the life of me, don't know why it's such a wide discount. 10% is normal. I mean, we have some, what's normal? You know, in the bull market, 10% is normal. 12% in this market is probably normal. So that's, in my opinion, relatively about 4% wider than normal. So I guess you have to ask yourself, is the money you'd invest in this equity closed-end fund, is it currently in cash? Is it currently in a mutual fund? Is it currently in ETF? Is it currently in stocks? Because if it's in a mutual fund, an ETF, or stocks, then you're already getting a 5% bonus. You're already putting assets to work. $10 of assets for $9.50. Now, if you're worried about another, maybe a... pull back in the market, now, let's say today's 1% becomes a 10%, that discount could widen. But if you know, what's your investment timeline? Are you 50 years old investing for 75? Are you 80 years old investing for next week? I mean, what's your timeline and how much risk you want to have? So that is a component of really good merit of what's, you know, there's still discounts available, so as long as sentiment improves, which, who knows what 2010 is going to say, but I hope by 2011 it's improved. You know, I mean, that credit is flowing, that, you know, the finance fund, there's actually PATFAP is a finance fund that's at a, we'll check the discount, probably a pretty solid discount after today. And there's, you know, it's such a wide discount that you really have to say, can I hold on to this money and be patient to wait it out? And of course, if something bad happens, have, you know, we always say, but John Templeton always said, don't sell something to what you're going to buy it in. He didn't live to 2008, so, I mean, who knows. But, I mean, sometimes it's nice to hold on to cash until you see what happens and the dust settles. But generally, we like to at least, you know, put it somewhere. There's a couple places that are relatively low volatility that give us a little bit of the exposure so that if we were wrong and pulled out inadvertently, we don't have 0.1% yielding on the sideline. But that is a really good question. So, comparing these funds, and here, I try to pick one common data point for six funds, and then look at all the other data points and how they're different. So here, they have roughly the same relative premium, about 4.4%. But one has an absolute premium of negative 12.28, and one has an actual premium of 10. And if you look at it, my first guess is, people see S&P 500 and go, I've heard of that. I really don't. I mean, I also look at the indicated yield of 16.5 and go, that's kind of high, isn't it? But again, the return on capital is pretty high in this fund, as you can only imagine. But when you look at it, like, oh, it has a lower expense ratio, so I like to buy cheaper run funds. But if you look at the NAV return, MSP kicked the crap out of it. Its market price kicked the crap out of it. Now, the challenge is MSP's really run up. It's just off this 52-week high. So, again, covered call funds, if we have a roaring bear market, will underperform. Sometimes when the market's up 1, 1.5% in a day, you'll see the covered call funds move back in market price. You know, one of the funds that I've used for clients is NCN. I think it's on the next slide. And I think if you can get it, you know, in the current environment below 850, I'm happy with it. Because again, you're taking that bet of I'm going to be paid to wait, and if it's choppy or down, I'll outperform the general equity market as a whole, And if I can buy something at a discount, then I got more assets working for my dollar. And the only risk factor, remember, being dividend cuts or widening of the discount is a major factor, or the sector itself just having a bad time period. And so, you know, liquidity. Well, if you're have $10 million in the market, as I'm sure you all do, you may have trouble buying a fund that trades only 200 and change thousand a day. So maybe something with four times liquidity is your only option. So these are factors, again, why do institutions stay out of these funds? Because they say, I remember talking to the fund timers at my first conference here in Atlanta. It was, they said, well, what if I want to buy $2 million of the fund today? And I said, use a limit order. Buy it in the next 2 weeks. I mean, they go, but I'm a fund timer, you don't get that. I move in on a funds on a daily basis, so probably not a good call for a closed-end funds. So here, and again, not necessarily saying buy MSB, but look at it. You're getting 9.2%. So obviously you can see why people want the 16.5, but who would be happy with a distribution of 9.2 right now? I mean, anything north of 7 or 8, I think, is pretty amazing, as long as you can realize what you're buying. And that, to me, is just a really... I just really can't talk enough about how it amazes me that people are paying $1.10 per dollar for something that's likely to underperform.
Curious, you've got the yield of 9.2. You've got an expense ratio of 1.5. Mm-hmm. Is that yield net after the expense ratio, or do you have to reduce the premium?
You don't. See, because remember, I didn't say, to me, I said distribution yield. So some of it is going to be capital gain, some of it's going to be covered call premium, some of it's going to be maybe okay. Return of capital. But the expenses, like a mutual fund, are taken out equally over the year at the fund level. So
okay, so you don't reduce the...
You don't reduce the distribution yield by the expense ratio. But again, it's good to know the expense ratio because, remember, all else equal, it's less friction on the your NAV. And so, but again, if you're paying a difference of 22% on portfolios that, and I don't have it on the screen, but that track kind of close to each other, it's okay to pay 42 basis points a year, in my opinion. Because you have other, it's like a headwind. A premium is a headwind. A managed distribution is a headwind. So that if you've got the best jet engine in the world, you'll power through. But if one of those things busts, you're crashing and burning. And that's why, you can make money trading funds at a premium. You can. And we are... do 30 to 40 trades a year for the average client, so we're not buy and hold, but we're not traders either, so we'd rather, again, buy something cheap. I guess we're Scottish. The next slide is going after relatively the same 12-month NAV return. So the last 12 months, the portfolio manager did the same rough result with the chunk of money he was given.
Is there a way to teach your ROC out of these?
Working on that, we have the two data points I want to add is a dividend growth figure that I'm still figuring out how to design it for our service, and a return of principal 90-day look, because I'm sick of doing the math myself, and I'm going to pay the programmers to then make all that. Whoever wants to recession, go over to London and be a programmer and fund data. They bill you $250 an hour. Would love to have that chosen. But yes, that's something that, again, right now I do it manually, and I'll show you where to look for it. And that's a work in progress. I've been trying to work with the CBOE on it and with the association just to get their take on options and how it's being reported and the accounting principles. So it's something that I just learned about probably 4 months ago, and I'm still muddling through. But generally, I'd say, look for those that have these smaller return of capital, because then they're
regular
fund. Yeah, but in this section, you'll find numbers that you go, how can I be? They look like they're paying there what they're earning, and they are. But it's so here we have the same NAV performance. You get the market price. It was better on the one that you're paying too much for, but after you've doubled your money, you have new highs, you get the headwind factor. Should you, if you bought a year ago, would you be happy today? Of course. But if you're buying today, would you be happy with tomorrow? And again, the major factors I see are that you're paying 35% too much because they're giving you a 17.6. So again, don't buy the dividend. But if you had the guts to 12 months ago, this you know, doesn't mean you'll be right by not buying the dividend. But you'll avoid a risk factor we think is worth avoiding as a professional or an investor. And so we have roughly the same liquidity, half the assets, almost twice the yield. But again, this is a smaller relative premium MCN. It's something that we have bought for clients. It's in my Roth IRA because I hate paying taxes. But I'll take 9.2. Kind of a theme here. If you're over 10, it's usually a problem, in my opinion, with the fund. Yes, sir.
When you look at the current discount of 10.4 and 52-week average is bigger, maybe minus 16.
Yes.
Does that tell you that that's something to be concerned with? Say, well, if we go back to 16?
Well, looking back 12 months includes a whole lot of crud. So I say, if I did this position a year ago, I would have been worried because, wow, it's trading 6% narrower than usual for the past year. And it's odd to say 2007 was a normal year, but compared to 2008 and 9, yes, it was. So it's, if you believe that markets are going to improve, whether it's incrementally or very quickly, I mean, you know, then that's not a significant risk factor. If you're in the belief that things are going to get worse, that we shouldn't be at the multiples we are in our stock market, that there is more bad news looming, well, then that's got to drive your investment decisions no matter what the heck you're buying. I mean, hopefully we'll make the right calls most of the time, you and yours and ours and our portfolio. But that's really, I mean, my goal is to help you kick the tires, know where to look, understand the structure so that if you said, hey, covered calls make sense for my objective, I don't, you know, how can I buy one that reduces my risk and also gives me the decent upside? And if things get worse, if the market breaches March 9th, then, but of course, these funds will outperform the S&P 500 structurally because they're writing call premiums. And if you have a mutual fund doing a similar thing and people panic and sell it, there'll be redemption pressures which will incrementally erode your NAV. You're losing money either way. It's sometimes sad to say if you only lost less than 30% in 08, you were awesome. We find a fund that goes, oh, they're only down 27% last year. And it's so weird to say that with a straight face and be happy about it. But there were closed-end funds last year that were down 50, 60, 70, 80%. There were some international real estate funds that just blew up. There are some, many, you know, tiny funds that have liquidated or merged since then. So, yeah, there is. But what's your outlook on the markets?
Now, is there anything there on your list of those bullets that indicates that some of that 9.2 is returning to capital? Is cannibalizing?
And again, as I said, we're going to look at these funds after the presentation on the web with some where if I can show you where to go and pull up. You do your research or you read an article on Barron's and you get a fund where you can go and kind of get a feel for what's normal for a fund, and I'll give you some pointers. If you have questions after tonight, my card's out there and I like talking, so catch me on the phone and be happy to chat with you for half an hour or an hour, depends on what the day's like. So happy to work with you on that individual basis if you need to. But we'll check it out live here as well. But again, trying to say, okay, these one data point's the same, but these funds, I was looking for similar NAVs with the widest spread. So I plotted all 29 funds, and I was looking for the oh my gosh factor because it's out there. It's like, how the heck could this be normal? Now this slide I didn't do because I was only part of the presentation last time, but I wanted to look at the similar indicated yield. You know, because some people say, covered call fund, yield's 11.5. That's pretty pretty amazing. You have 1.2. 1.2, that's a good yield. But again, one's at a premium, one's at a discount. Obviously, the funds aren't exactly the same, but why would you buy the premium? You might say about the same net assets, a little more liquidity in the premium, but not to justify it. Healthy expense ratio. I mean, remember I said over 2, you have to really like it? I mean, we don't own OLA. And the expense ratio is enough for me not to buy it because there's other ones that have lower expense ratios. But again, the point was to compare two funds that had one similar data point. And also, like, OLA really has not been that good. I mean, the manager's only done 9% in 12 months. What the heck was he not buying? I mean, what was he in CDs? Was he buying covered calls that were losing money? I mean, I can't understand how he can make 9% in the last 12 months in a covered call fund. But this manager found a way to do it, so congratulations. Okay, so I mentioned it earlier, and it's the current market price. And you look at the 52-week high and low. So the high is 10. The low is 5, and the 7.5, that's a 50. The 10, that's 100. So it was another way, because sometimes you find funds at similar discounts and even similar relative discounts. And I wanted another measure to give me an idea of what was, I guess, normal for the fund. And it's not as good as the other two, but it's a third option for evaluating funds.
Is that a moving average?
No. We do also track kind of the market price versus the 90-day moving average in our data service is another indicator. With our data service being weekly, I try to pick points that were more, you know, that would change more on a weekly basis. So while we do include the 52-week NAV and market price performance because that's nice to know, especially for these comparisons, most of the data tends to be a quarter old, because that's really more pertinent to our evaluatory needs. But you can run those. Anyone that runs technical analysis, many you can do that yourself, both the strength and whatnot. So why would you buy a closed-end fund? What things could make it great or good or a good fit for your needs? And again, relative value to its peers. So if it's at a discount, a little bit wider than its peer funds. And you also like the distribution and the dividend coverage and the other factors that are important. Maybe the peer group got beat up. Like there's a, what is it? It was posted on one of the closed-end fund discussion groups last week, It was a equity income fund that used to be a REIT fund, so it doesn't have the REIT risk, but people still think it's a REIT fund. So they're trading like a REIT fund. So for the people that know it's not a REIT fund, and so they're buying it cheap as crap because it's not a REIT fund. So kind of like other people haven't noticed the data point, or they didn't do their homework, they didn't look at the holdings in the last disclosure, they just saw that last year it was a REIT fund, so they assume this year it is. There's been a couple of changes this year, you may notice, at least in the closing fund space, a lot of mergers, liquidations, and whatnot. So good news, like I said, unnoticed. Because good news noticed has already been priced in. But closing funds offering efficiency is not available other places, because of that, it can take a couple days sometimes for folks to notice. And so if you get those email alerts of the press release, look it over, say, oh, increased dividend. I already like the fund, or fundamentally, I like the fund. The objective makes sense for my needs. Now's a better reason to buy it, because now there's going to be more people looking at it. Remember, market price and the discount premium, it's popularity. So any news or market factoid that drives interest to a sector or to an individual fund, it's going to narrow that discount if it's good news and widen it if it's bad news. Now, how long is another question. But, same with any investment. Dividend increase, we love to buy things that we like that have increases because that says, hey, they're actually getting better at what they're doing, or they solve their problems, or they're paying what they earn, mindset. I said sector optimism when real estate was awesome. I mean, it was hard to find a U.S. REIT fund at a discount. You could find some of the global funds at a discount, which still had significant U.S. exposure. But now maybe you don't want to be there. I mean, again, this optimism or pessimism, that's a factor on the sell or the buy side for the whole sector that the fund's in. And then the peer fund selling pressure. If everyone's, if a couple of muni bond funds have dividend cuts, then maybe other funds with the same sponsor might see selling pressure But if their uni figures are strong, if their dividend coverage is great, then take that selling pressure as an opportunity to pick up another percent or two on lowering your cost basis. And again, uncertain markets have had this kind of weird. If there's a strong dividend and you can hold out and they don't cut it, then you just get paid to wait. And that really is a major theme in closing funds, getting paid to wait. Of course, make sure they don't cut the dividend or you're getting, you know, a really bad deal. And this is, I think, the last slide. And it really just goes through what and why I love that I was here in December. Because if you look on a historical basis, the average discount is 2% wider this month than the rest of the year. Now, you'll see that a slightly less significant this year because it's driven by tax loss selling, but it is a seasonal trend. You'll tend to notice it after that big year-end dividend has been paid, because those people that didn't realize the dividend was paid, that's another factor in there. And then the tax loss people, the people that are calling up their advisors or deciding on their own to say, hey, I need to take a tax loss. So obviously, think rationally, what years have more tax losses than others, and they'll widen it or narrow this effect. But there's about a 60-ish day window of making an extra pop in many closed-end funds because of the tax loss selling. So just keep your eyes out there for that opportunity. So now what I'd like to do... other factors. So second to last slide. So I covered a lot tonight, to say the least. And I realized that even licensed, seasoned folks that have played in closed-end funds would probably have a handful of questions. So this slide covers, I guess, pretty much every kind of factor that we'd like to look at for a fund as a piece of the analysis. You'll see many of them I covered, but not everyone. You know, obviously, I only had 45-ish minutes, and we can maybe do a college class sometime and take, you know, tests and quizzes and papers, and we can make it more of a semester-long event. But other things just to look at, but pretty much the most important factors I did cover. Activism, people trying to open into fund, chance to make possibly make that discount to NAV. Generally speaking, if you own a fund that's going to open end, or if someone's trying to open end or turn into a mutual fund, take the initial gain, because it's in hold out for an extra 3-5%. Depends on, you know, obviously you feel like it's worth it, fine, but you know, if it pops up 8% and there's another 4 or 5 to go, you've already got 2/3 of the close. And it's kind of like knowing when to fold them. I mean, just you take the money you've made and go find something else, because you're basically speculating on a deal that you have no idea if it's going to happen or not. They're more likely after a crappy market. So you'll see more of it in 2010 than we have to that 2000 early 2008 before it got crappy. But there are people out there that like to open end funds. It's like they think that's their investment objective, is I'm going to buy things and try to make the spread, you know, so I can make 10% in 6 months. And if the NAV goes up at the same time, then I've increased my performance. So there are activisms out there, and they're just, you know, you'll get notices of it as a fund shareholder, and you can decide whether you want to vote to agree with them or not. We're generally against them because we like to have more options to buy for our clients, because this is what we do for a living. So it doesn't mean that they don't all make sense. I mean, some funds should merge or they should liquidate because they're just not big enough, so their expense ratio is high, or they're not having good NAV performance, or the manager's a crappy manager, so he needs to go find something else to do. I did read in the investment news on the plane down here that there's a bunch of Wall Street people taking jobs as New York City cops. Which starts off at about $50,000 a year, and after 5 years, you get, with benefits, works up to $93,000, which is, of course, nothing compared to what they were making, but they currently were making zero. So that was a very odd article about.
What are live boat provisions?
Live boat, that's where, good question. That's where, in order to help narrow the discount, or to maintain a narrower discount, the fund may have a buyback provision, like AvExpress. If it's over 10%, it can choose to buy in shares, which reduces the dilution of all the earnings. And so those provisions can be very helpful to the investor, and they're useful to know if they're out there. And the other thing I talked about earlier, like we always say, closing funds are fixed capitalization. Well, there's dividend reinvestment plans, and there's sometimes this not perfect. Yeah. They raised their money, they invested, then it could grow, but it's generally always people say, no, it's not fixed. It is compared to a mutual fund. You're not going to get a redemption. Anything else that people want to question on? Yes, sir.
From time to time, you read about sort of an arbitrage opportunity where a fund's trading at a huge discount to its net asset value. And then some institutional investor will notice that in the prospectus of the charter documents that there's a way to force the fund to liquidate. And the fund, theoretically, the notion is that the fund was forced to liquidate and you get net asset value for all the shares, with the investor buying in at a 50 or 30% discount. And you can capture that spread overnight. How many funds typically have a mechanism to force by vote or something, force liquidation, or have an end-of-life provision where they're only in existence for 10 years or 20 years?
There have been a couple of those term close-end funds, which people equate to the investment trust markets out there. There's less of them now because most of them have already been discovered and exploited. But as I said earlier, if that happens, and you see that pop, you know, was that a 12% discount, now it's at a 6. You can hope for the extra 6, or you can take the 6 you got last night. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. You know, you got a good pop today. So they're out there, and they can happen. The funds have gotten, the ones that don't want to have it happen have gotten smarter about the mechanisms to protect against that ability. And as long as the SEC says that those provisions are allowed, they'll continue to use them because, I mean, close a fund manager, he wants to go to work every day and buy things. That's his job. So the discount, while if it's pervasive through normal times, can be troubling. But there's some venture capital funds out there that, honestly, you're unlikely to see in a mutual fund structure because of the fixed, you know, liquidity concerns. And, you know, that's why closing funds started in the foreign markets, because how illiquid were the Chinese stock market 15 years ago? Still not as great as ours, but it's improved a lot. So mutual funds, ETFs, gain access once liquidity was less of a concern. And so I think that as long as you capitalize on the highlighted the benefits of the closing fund structure, you know, we like them for U.S. equity funds. But there's so many other options that it's harder to convince a new person to go and buy a closed-end equity fund versus a covered call or a muni or a preferred equity or whatever other options that a senior loan fund out there. And senior loan funds are interesting. The discounts have narrowed, but they provide some of that inflation protection, which will make them like investment-grade bond funds. I mean, they sound great, because they're less risky and many of them have no leverage. But those funds are going to be hit really hard in a rising rate environment versus senior loan funds will be hit less. And so as long as you're okay with senior bank loans in your portfolio, you buy them at a discount, they paid away. There's a couple out there that are pretty solid. So what I was hoping to do, and more questions asked, is log into that website to show you how to find this stuff out for yourself.
I've got one question.
Yes, sir.
I know of at least one closed-end fund, which is a fund of funds.
FOF.
Yeah, right. And I was wondering, I mean, since I'm new to this thing, I thought, well, that's, I can at least watch some of the moving parts and not have to lose them. I was just wondering if that's a good way to get introduced to closed-end funds.
It can be. And there, I mean, the discount right now is probably the 9% range.
Yeah.
We actually featured it in one or two interviews for a letter released Friday.
Oh.
Which I guess you haven't read yet, which is fine. But I use it as a great proxy, you know, because especially if you buy a discount on a discount and you're not sure where to go, but you think things are going to go narrower, it can be a good, for us, our perspective is a shorter-term play. But you're right. If you can buy it at a discount and a relative discount, you know, I'd say anything north of 5% right now, you're probably okay, but of course the wider the better, right?
Right.
It's a higher distribution yield for you. Then it's a good entry point because then you're getting exposure to the marketplace. The challenge is I think that most people in this room would enjoy the academic and the process of picking closed-end funds and deciding what's, I mean, this group is put themselves out there to learn how to do their job better, right? So why let someone else do all the work for you? I mean, you're going to do it yourself. So it's a good entry point, but I think it's a good chance to maybe look at what they own and then maybe buy some of those as a possibility. I mean, their fund had a rough year last year too, so even on NAV. So, no one's perfect. But it's an interesting product. I'm surprised nothing else has come out like it. But we'll see. I mean, maybe there's one on the horizon I haven't heard of yet. So. But it's the only one. You are correct. Okay. So there's a lot of free resources. The ICI, it's just a good place to go for any fund and knowledge. It's a good place to look for statistics on any fund. So I always start with that one. The Closed Fund Association, they give more preference to their member organizations for promoting stuff, but they are the nonprofit trade association for the industry. They do have some great booklets on their website, one about managed distributions, one about closed fund investing. You can log in and go to the lower right-hand corner and download, I think, 4 or 5 PDF files. That'll be another additional extension of this presentation. But again, someone else presenting it, so maybe it'll be different. Yeah. The two, I guess there's the Nubian website, cefconnect.com. I like it better than the association's website because they have a bigger budget, so they can pay for more stuff. And especially with the new revamp in the last 2.5 months, they offer some really powerful stuff to look at. And this is a site we'll go to on 2 slides. I forgot about these. Our newsletter is free. It goes out over email. Usually my goal is if you sign up, I send you our stuff in the mail, and then I try to call people within 30 to 60 days to introduce myself. If I see Marietta, Georgia, or Atlanta, Georgia the next couple days, I'll probably assume you were here. So I may not call you, but of course, if you have a question, you're welcome to call me. But as we email you when we release a new Scott letter, if we're speaking somewhere, I picked all of our Georgia subscribers and said, hey, we're going to be here. If there's a conference or a webcast, we let people know. And it's kind of, we've never done more than 20 emails in a year, so we really don't try to kill you. Obviously, we're trying to serve the community without harassing. Fine line. The two commentaries written by professionals, there's Jim Margolin at First Trust, and you can sign up for free on their website on this link here to receive this quarterly commentary. If you don't like getting lots of emails, you can see it posted on the association's website every quarter. Nuveen has a commentary that they write on closed-end funds as well. If you like social networking and know about LinkedIn, I started a LinkedIn group there, and the goal being for individuals and professionals to trade discussions and to be a landing pad for other events and kind of a more active landing page than our email that we send out. And it's been, I've had some other folks there that have been useful to our research. Morningstar has, I believe, the oldest discussion group on closed-end funds, and so you can trade email commentary with other folks that have been doing this for longer than me. I mean, it's so funny. How many would believe I have almost a decade's experience? I can't believe it myself sometimes. So, but a lot of folks have longer, so it'd be useful to you. And Seeking Alpha, I started following a fellow there. I don't always agree with him, but he's writing about closed-end funds, usually weekly, and he does have some compelling arguments. So, I can't remember his name offhand. It's like Jeff O'Key or Joe Effie or Comoni. Yeah. I've never met him, but I found him somehow. Someone posted one of his pieces. And then there's two discussion groups on Yahoo, which Yahoo is free. So and there's a lot of stuff there. So, if you have the time to read through lots of emails, as hopefully you do if you manage your money, then you'll get some commentary, some feedback from people that aren't pressuring you to buy anything. So this is hopefully more than you'll have time to do and a great starting point for your next level of knowledge. Then there are some paid services. Our service is $185 a quarter, $595 a year. It's 14 days, sign up. Then at the 14th day, if you don't cancel, it charges you. And we do a monthly webinar on basically what it's like, why we do it, how it's used. Generally, if you're not tweaking your portfolio more than about every 2 to 3 weeks, then maybe it's probably not worth it. Obviously, if you have $5,000 in the market, it's too expensive. If you have $10 million, it's a good deal. The best service out there is the most expensive. We haven't bought it yet, but it's on our hope. But it is available there if you have $5,000 a quarter. Hertzfeldt's letter, he's our closest competitor, and also friend, he got my dad the book contract in 91. His service is a monthly, and I'd say his analysis is typically discount-based, but they do some good research in there about some auction maker, I mean, different items that Cecilia writes about, and it's, yeah, if you're going in them hardcore, it's another place to get knowledge, and relatively cheap. And then I think, you know, this group still existed. There's another weekly report that actually I thought had died out. And I called the number and it rang. No one answered, so I assume that they still exist. But this website offers a Wiesenberger product, which is three mergers ago for Thomson Leppert, Reuters. So, yeah, they still call it the Wiesenberger Weekly Review, so who knows. But it's a cheaper version of our report, but honestly, everything they offer you can get for free. So, but they do some good averages work, and they do some highlights of sectors that moved the most in the previous week. So there is some value there, but when I built ours, I just basically tried to improve theirs. But unfortunately, my data cost was higher. And then if you care about my background, and the lawyers make me show this slide for 5, 4, and that's it. I'm going to go to the web now. One of my favorite thing to do, especially with the webinars, is just to get out there and show people. So this is the... Maybe I'll get so people can see over me. All right, so... That's all right. Sat all day on the plane. So let's see. We looked at... anyone have a fund they own? Bueller? Okay. I'll pull some out. So here's one of the covered call funds that I said we liked. This is a broadband connection, so it's not as fast as I'd like. I mean, a mobile broadband. Yes. All right, so first of all, you need to log in for the best information. They haven't emailed me, I think, more than once or a month or so, so it's not the the end of the world. They don't harass you too much. And they do really provide a lot for free. You'll get more information than if you can visit without. You'll get more tracking and a little more depth. So the key is, you know, click on that fund, and it's going to load up kind of the overview page, as they call it. And some of the keys are, is, again, the NAV trend. You know, you can see it leveling out. You can change the look. You can go back further. Some people miss these little links. You know, they just see a 12-month rolling, a 12-week, yeah, 12-month rolling. And give it a look. This goes back, gives you what happened last year. I mean, put it in perspective. Yes, but again, the investment objective, you know, give this a look. Make sure you like what they say. Right here, if you have, let's see, this is the average daily trading amount. Gives you an idea, 531,000 a day. And it gives you the breakout in the expense ratio, including interest expense. Now, the challenge with the free data is not every fund has every, I mean, it's amazing. Not like bond funds, some bond funds will show the duration figures, some won't. Pretty sure they all report it, but, you know, hey, free information, take what you can get. The distribution screen, this will be the one you saw from the presentation on. Oh, there it is. And you can go and get a feel for, you know, it increased slightly, and it was cut in May. And again, key here is to look at these as of dates. The sooner they were, the less likely they're wrong. The uni per share, again, doesn't matter for an equity and for a covered call fund, but it is reported. Leverage, there's very few of these funds that are levered. This is about just under 12%. So, that is a risk factor, but it's also a way that they can enhance the income. This shows you that the distribution amounts, and this fund is showing no return of capital. Again, one of the reasons why I like it. And it's, but it's showing a lot of short-term gains, though. It's hard. I don't think the fund reporting was designed for a covered call fund. You know, they're relatively new. It's kind of like Morningstar, which now has pretty good fund information because they bought fund data. It used to be crappy at covering closed-end funds because they weren't used to things that traded at NAV. And you know, things improve. The other thing that's worth looking at is this chart, which we looked at. It's that spread. And click since inception. That'll give you the biggest window available. So you can see, normal market, not normal market. Hello? Not normal market. So you can see, you know, what's normal for the fund. And for the first 3 years it existed, it was at a, generally a premium. So the thought would be one day should go back, right? I mean, I don't know when, but if it warrants it in 05, 06, 07, why wouldn't it now? So maybe we'll go to a narrow discount instead. Who knows? But it gives you an idea of what's normal for the fund. And also, this is new since they redid the site. You can get a six-month average discount, which I like even more than the 1 year. Because, again, shorter window to look at. And you can look, you can spend, I mean, hours on this site. Then you want to look at the portfolio characteristics. This gives you a better idea of what they're doing. You know, make sure that what they think they're doing, they're actually reporting and doing. So, yeah, I mean, again, how are they getting that distribution? What are they doing? What's their turnover? These are all important factors. Another one, let's look at, what was the one with a really ridiculous BVP, I think? Who's taking notes?
Yeah.
Phil was.
Yeah, BEP.
All right. So it's a 10% discount, and we look at its price distributions. So it only pays twice a year so far. Surprised. It 91% return of capital. That can't all be called premium, right? That's where, you know, nothing's perfect. Pricing history. So let's go back since inception, try to look back into the 05, 07, 07. The 605.07 range, so we saw what the other fund did trading wise.
Most of them pay monthly.
Many of them, well, many of them pay quarterly. Couple call funds. No, actually, some pay monthly. Yes, there's a. That's something added to our service because it's easy to find, but not on a peer level. People are going to ask you their question. Quarterly is normal. There's four that pay, five that pay monthly, two that pay semi-annual, three that pay semi-annual. So, about 80% pay quarterly. But generally, I mean, many of the equity income funds are more like than a quarterly payment because it gives them a better chance to earn the dividend, I guess, and to, because it gives them more wiggle room. How about that? Another thing here I want to show you for further information, just keeping it simpler, because they're, come on, AT&T. There we go. Here's Jeff's commentary. So he updates it a couple weeks after the quarter end. And down here, free booklets. So some more information to dive deeper into managed distributions, covered call funds. Heck, where'd that come from? Close-end funds. So there's just those five things are a great place to continue your research. So I think it might be past some of your bedtime. So I can talk all night, but of course available for questions afterwards. I think I know the presentation and would happy to chat further on the phone or tonight if that works for you. So thank you, I guess.
Great.